大家好，这里是北京外语广播正在播出的大学生英语在线 Question of the Day， 我是 Larry， 欢迎大家加入我们的 QQ 群，下载更多的英语学习资料。我们的 QQ 群的号码是9012-7292 9012-7292，欢迎您的加入。那又到了周末了啊，周末呢我们都会来聊一聊 TED TED Talk， 希望对大家的雅思和托福学习有所帮助和启发。今天我们请来的专家老师是来自优衣爱学校的壮壮老师。老师好。
Hello, and we'd like to start with how the world begins. 今天我们听的这一段呢 TED Talk 比较有意思，他在18分钟的时间里边就把我们的世界历史讲了一遍。
Wow.
从宇宙大爆炸之前开始。是吧？那么这个话题如果是考雅思托福呢会怎么用呢？
用不到，
还是能用得到，
用得到
啊！比如说，这个人他在讲的时候，他能够有具有高度浓缩概括的能力，
嗯，
同时他又很形象，他能把一个特别复杂的一个理论说清楚，
嗯，
是吧？那所以在描述人物题，比如说你敬佩的一个老师，那你就可以用这个素材了。那么在听之前呢，我还会给大家介绍一下的讲话的人叫 David Christian， 是什么人也？He is。By training, a historian of Russia and the Soviet Union. But since the 1980s, he has become interested in the world history on very large scales. He has written on the social and material history of the 19th century Russian peasantry, in particular on aspects of diet and the role of alcohol.In 1989, he began teaching courses on big history, surveying the past on the largest possible scales, including those of biology and astronomy. Christian is a member of the Australian Academy of the Humanities. Over the next few years, he will also be working with the support of Bill Gates to create an online course in big history for high school students.所以呢大家看这个人哈，原来是 by training， 他的学什么出身的呢？是 historian of Russian and the Soviet Union。
他是一个关注俄罗斯和前苏联的历史学家，就是之前的一个事儿啊。
逐渐他就转到了看待宇宙啊，整个的这个 cosmic， 是宇宙的这个构造的时间段上看这个历史，叫 big history。而且他随后要和比尔盖茨合作，做一个什么东西呢？To create an online course in the big history.
An online course in big history. 他们讲的课是大历史课，不是一般的历史课，
不是一般历史，就宏观。那说到这个大历史，我就想起来现在流行的一个词儿叫大数据。
Big data.
对了 ，big data 就这么用哈。好，那这个他会做一个整个涉及生物和天文学还有历史的这么一个课程，所以你看人家是相当的有追求，这是一个年龄看起来很不年轻的人啊，所以人家对于学术的钻研精神还是值得我们学习的。
嗯，
好，那我们先介绍一下这个讲话是什么内容。 Backed by stunning illustrations, David Christian narrates a complete history of the universe from the Big Bang to the Internet in a riveting 18 minutes.This is big history, an enlightening wide-angle look at complexity, life and humanity set against our slim share of the cosmic timeline. 也就是我们在18分钟这样短短的时间就直接从宇宙大爆炸之前到了 Internet 时期。所以说呢他讲的是相当大的历史 big history。而且呢从人类的起源文明啊，它是一个非常广角的视角去看待这种复杂的生命人文啊，在整个宇宙这个时间段上面是怎样发展的。在一开始的时候呢，一会儿大家听的时候呢，我给大家描述一下，他放了一个特别短的视频，就是大家知道在家做饭打鸡蛋这个事儿，对不对？
嗯，
这鸡蛋打呀打，他这个视频呢就倒过来，所以鸡蛋呢从散的蛋黄逐渐到了一个个的蛋黄，四个蛋黄，最后呢又还原成四个鸡蛋，带着壳的鸡蛋，完好无缺的，就是这么一个过程。紧接着他就开始讲这个宇宙是怎样生成的。下面我们来看一下生词。第一个词会提到 helium， helium 是氦离子，
是一种化学元素嘛。
我们知道那个太阳啊，它那上面就有许多的氦 啊，还有氢等各种元素啊，在讲座中呢他会讲到。然后再来一个词，就是各种的物质，一个是 proton 呢是质子，那 electron 呢
电子，
对，还会提到一个东西叫 lepton 呢是氢子，叫雷普顿，它的复数是 lepta 好，这几个都是物质微观的状态下的一个单位。好，再来呢就会提到一个词叫 Goldilocks gold 加上 i 然后 lock 一个词，
金锁，
对，他说是金发姑娘。好，再往下呢有一个用法叫做 when the going gets tough， 就是当情况变得艰难的时候，常用的英文还有后边一个半句叫做 the tough gets going， 只有那些坚韧不拔的人才能够胜出。
When the going gets tough, the tough gets going。
对，我举一个例子哈，它是英文就这样解释就行， When the situation is difficult, it's time for you to show you can make it. The brave person will act. You face the difficulty and you don't run away。好，那么闲话少说，我们来听一段这个讲座，挺有意思的，请大家仔细听。
Yes, it is a scrambled egg. But as you look at it, I hope you'll begin to feel just slightly uneasy. Because you may notice that what's actually happening is that the egg is unscrambling itself. And you'll now see the yolk and the white have separated, and now they're going to be poured back into the egg. And we all know in our heart of hearts that this is not the way the universe works. A scrambled egg is mush. Tasty mush, but it's mush. An egg is a beautiful, sophisticated thing that can create even more sophisticated things, such as chickens. And we know in our heart of hearts that the universe does not travel from mush to complexity. In fact, this gut instinct is reflected in one of the most fundamental laws of physics, the second law of thermodynamics, or the law of entropy. What that says basically is that the general tendency of the universe is to move from order and structure to lack of order, lack of structure, in fact, to mush. And that's why that video feels a bit strange. And yet, look around us. What we see around us is staggering complexity. Eric Beinhocker estimates that in New York City alone, there are some 10 billion SKUs, or distinct commodities, being traded. That's hundreds of times as many species as there are on Earth. And they're being traded by a species of almost 7 billion individuals who are linked by trade, travel, and the internet into a global system of stupendous complexity. So here's a great puzzle. In a universe ruled by the second law of thermodynamics, how is it possible to generate the sort of complexity I've described, the sort of complexity represented by you and me and the convention center? Well, the answer seems to be the universe can create complexity, but with great difficulty. In pockets, there appear what my colleague Fred Speer calls Goldilocks conditions. Not too hot, not too cold, just right for the creation of complexity. And slightly more complex things appear. And where you have slightly more complex things, you can get slightly more complex things. And in this way, complexity builds stage by stage. Each stage is magical because it creates the impression of something utterly new, appearing almost out of nowhere in the universe. We refer in big history to these moments as threshold moments. And at each threshold, the going gets tougher. The complex things get more fragile, more vulnerable. The Goldilocks conditions get more stringent, and it's more difficult to create complexity. Now, we, as extremely complex creatures, desperately need to know this story of how the universe creates complexity despite the second law, and why complexity means vulnerability and fragility. And that's the story that we tell in big history. But to do it, you have to do something that may at first sight seem completely impossible. You have to survey the whole history of the universe. So let's do it. Let's begin by winding the timeline back 13.7 billion years to the beginning of time. Around us, there's nothing. There's not even time or space. Imagine the darkest, emptiest thing you can, and cube it a gazillion times, and that's where we are. And then suddenly, bam! A universe appears, an entire universe, and we've crossed our first threshold. The universe is tiny, it's smaller than an atom, it's incredibly hot, it contains everything that's in today's universe, so you can imagine, it's busting, and it's expanding at incredible speed. And at first it's just a blur, but very quickly distinct things begin to appear in that blur. Within the first second, energy itself shatters into distinct forces, including electromagnetism and gravity. And energy does something else quite magical. It congeals to form matter. Quarks that'll create protons, and leptons that include electrons. And all of that happens in the first second. Now we move forward 380,000 years. That's twice as long as humans have been on this planet. And now simple atoms appear of hydrogen and helium. Now, I want to pause for a moment, 380,000 years after the origins of the universe, because we actually know quite a lot about the universe at this stage. We know, above all, that it was extremely simple. It consisted of huge clouds of hydrogen and helium atoms, and they have no structure. They're really a sort of cosmic mush. But that's not completely true. Recent studies by satellites such as the WMAP satellite have shown that, in fact, there are just tiny differences in that background. What you see here, the blue areas are about a thousandth of a degree cooler than the red areas. These are tiny differences, but it was enough for the universe to move on to the next stage of building complexity, and this is how it works. Gravity is more powerful where there's more stuff. So where you get slightly denser areas, gravity starts compacting clouds of hydrogen and helium atoms. So we can imagine the early universe breaking up into a billion clouds. And each cloud is compacted, gravity gets more powerful as density increases, the temperature begins to rise at the center of each cloud, and then at the center of each cloud the temperature crosses the threshold temperature of 10 million degrees, protons start to fuse, there's a huge release of energy, and we have our first stars. From about 200 million years after the Big Bang, stars begin to appear all through the universe, billions of them. And the universe is now significantly more interesting and more complex. Stars will create the Goldilocks conditions for crossing two new thresholds. When very large stars die, they create temperatures so high that protons begin to fuse in all sorts of exotic combinations to form all the elements of the periodic table. If, like me, you're wearing a gold ring, it was forged in a supernova explosion. So now the universe is chemically more complex. And in a chemically more complex universe, it's possible to make more things. And what starts happening is that around young suns, young stars, all these elements combine, they swirl around, the energy of the star stirs them around, they form particles, they form snowflakes, they form little dust motes, they form rocks, they form asteroids, and eventually they form planets and moons, and that is how our solar system was formed 4.5 billion years ago. Rocky planets like our Earth are significantly more complex than stars because they contain a much greater diversity of materials. So we've crossed a fourth threshold of complexity. Now, the going gets tougher. The next stage introduces entities that are significantly more fragile, significantly more vulnerable, but they're also much more creative and much more capable of generating further complexity. I'm talking, of course, about living organisms. Living organisms are created by chemistry. We are huge packages of chemicals. So chemistry is dominated by the electromagnetic force. That operates over smaller scales than gravity, which explains why you and I are smaller than stars or planets. Now, what are the ideal conditions for chemistry? What are the Goldilocks conditions? Well, first, you need energy. But not too much. In the center of a star, there's so much energy that any atoms that combine will just get busted apart again. But not too little. In intergalactic space, there's so little energy that atoms can't combine. What you want is just the right amount. And planets, it turns out, are just right, because they're close to stars, but not too close. You also need a great diversity of chemical elements, and you need liquids, such as water. Why? Well, in gases, atoms move past each other so fast that they can't hitch up. In solids, atoms stuck together. They can't move. In liquids, they can cruise and cuddle and link up to form molecules. Now, where do you find such Goldilocks conditions? Well, planets are great, and our early Earth was almost perfect. It was just the right distance from its star to contain huge oceans of liquid water. And deep beneath those oceans, at cracks in the Earth's crust, you've got heat seeping up from inside the Earth, and you've got a great diversity of elements. So at those deep oceanic vents, fantastic chemistry began to happen, and atoms combined in all sorts of exotic combinations. But of course, life is more than just exotic chemistry. How do you stabilize those huge molecules that seem to be viable? Well, it's here that life introduces an entirely new trick. You don't stabilize the individual, you stabilize the template, the thing that carries information, and you allow the template to copy itself. And DNA, of course, is the beautiful molecule that contains that information. You'll be familiar with the double helix of DNA. Each one contains information. So DNA contains information about how to make living organisms. And DNA also copies itself. So it copies itself and scatters the templates through the ocean. So the information spreads. Notice that information has become part of our story. The real beauty of DNA, though, is in its imperfections. As it copies itself, once in every billion runs, there tends to be an error. And what that means is that DNA is, in effect, learning. It's accumulating new ways of making living organisms because some of those errors work. So DNA is learning, and it's building greater diversity and greater complexity. And we can see this happening over the last 4 billion years. For most of that time of life on Earth, living organisms have been relatively simple, single cells, but they had great diversity and inside great complexity. Then from about 600 to 800 million years ago, multicelled organisms appear. You get fungi, you get fish, you get plants, you get amphibia, you get reptiles, and then of course you get the dinosaurs. And occasionally there are disasters. 65 million years ago, an asteroid landed on Earth near the Yucatan Peninsula, creating conditions equivalent to those of a nuclear war. And the dinosaurs are wiped out. Terrible news for the dinosaurs, but great news for our mammalian ancestors, who flourished in the niches left empty by the dinosaurs. And we human beings are part of that creative evolutionary pulse that began 65 million years ago with the landing of an asteroid. Humans appeared about 200,000 years ago, and I believe we count as a threshold in this great story. Let me explain why. We've seen that DNA learns, in a sense. It accumulates information, but it is so slow. DNA accumulates information through random errors that just, some of which just happen to work. But DNA had actually generated a faster way of learning. It had produced organisms with brains. And those organisms can learn in real time. They accumulate information. They learn. The sad thing is, when they die, the information dies with them. Now, what makes humans different is human language. We are blessed with a language, a system of communication so powerful and so precise that we can share what we've learned with such precision that it can accumulate in the collective memory. And that means it can outlast the individuals who learnt that information, and it can accumulate from generation to generation. And that's why, as a species, we're so creative and so powerful, and that's why we have a history. We seem to be the only species in 4 billion years to have this gift. I call this ability collective learning. It's what makes us different. We can see it at work in the earliest stages of human history. We evolved as a species in the savanna lands of Africa. But then you see humans migrating into new environments, into desert lands, into jungles, into the ice age tundra of Siberia, tough environment, into the Americas, into Australasia. Each migration involved learning new ways of exploiting the environment, new ways of dealing with their surroundings. Then 10,000 years ago, exploiting a sudden change in global climate with the end of the last ice age, humans learned to farm. Farming was an energy bonanza. And exploiting that energy, human populations multiplied, human societies got larger, denser, more interconnected. And then, from about 500 years ago, humans began to link up globally through shipping, through trains, through telegraph, through the internet, until now we seem to form a single global brain of almost 7 billion individuals, and that brain is learning at warp speed. And in the last 200 years, something else has happened. We've stumbled on another energy bonanza in fossil fuels. So fossil fuels and collective learning together explain the staggering complexity we see around us. So, here we are, back at the convention center. We've been on a journey, a return journey, of 13.7 billion years. I hope you agree this is a powerful story. And it's a story in which humans play an astonishing and creative role. But it also contains warnings. Collective learning is a very, very powerful force. And it's not clear that we humans are in charge of it. I remember very vividly as a child growing up in England, living through the Cuban Missile Crisis. For a few days, the entire biosphere seemed to be on the verge of destruction. And the same weapons are still here, and they're still armed. If we avoid that trap, others are waiting for us. We're burning fossil fuels at such a rate that we seem to be undermining the Goldilocks conditions that made it possible for human civilizations to flourish over the last 10,000 years. So what big history can do is show us the nature of our complexity and fragility and the dangers that face us. But it can also show us our power with collective learning. And now, finally, this is what I want. I want my grandson, Daniel, and his friends and his generation throughout the world to know the story of big history and to know it so well that they understand both the challenges that face us and the opportunities that face us. And that's why a group of us are building a free online syllabus in big history for high school students throughout the world. We believe that big history will be a vital intellectual tool for them as Daniel and his generation face the huge challenges and also the huge opportunities ahead of them at this threshold moment in the history of our beautiful planet. I thank you for your attention.
好的，今天的讲座呢，从宇宙到人类历史，现今 Internet 的技术，就是18分钟浓缩。啊，希望大家听了呢有所触动吧，能学到
很大呀，
对，能学到一些有意思的知识啊，还有一些有意思的用法。
嗯，最后呢，欢迎大家加入我们的 QQ 群，我们的群号码是90127292，欢迎加入。感谢大家的收听，也谢谢壮壮老师的陪伴，我们下期节目再见。
那我们就下次节目再见。
大学生英语在线。你想知道的问题，你告诉他；你没想到的问题，他告诉你。最顶尖的英语专家，最有效的学习方法，雅思、托福、GRE，轻松得分没问题。Question of the day， 大学生英语在线，每天上午6:30，晚上11:00，与您准时相约。
给你一个机会。你最想得到什么东西？
汽车
，money，
豪宅，
漂亮女朋友，
芭比娃娃。
健康。
北京人民广播电台提醒您：关爱自己的健康，才能带来长久的幸福。
backyard, pull up in your fast car, whistling my name. Open up a beer and you say get over here and play a video game. I'm in his favorite sundress, watching me get undressed, take our body downtown. I say you're the bestest, leaning for a big kiss, put his favorite perfume on, go play a video game. It's you, it's you, it's all for you, everything I do, I tell you all the time. Heaven is a place on earth with you, tell me all the things you wanna do. I heard that you like the bad girls, honey, is that true? It's better than I ever even knew. They say that the world was built for two, only worth living if somebody is loving you. Baby, now swinging with the old stars, living for the fame. Kissing in the blue dark, playing pool and wild ducks, video game.
You alright? He's alright.
He holds me in his big arms, drunk and I am seeing stars, this is all I think of. Watching all our friends fall in and out of old clothes, this is my idea of fun. Playing video games. It's you, it's all for you. Everything I do, I tell you all the time. Heaven is a place on earth with you. Tell me all the things you want to do. I heard that you like the bad girls, honey. Is that true? It's better than I. Tell you all the time.